Yesterday we talked about how to construct the basis in a couple of different cases. First we did the case where the basis includes all the states, and then we did the magnetization conservation where we only include states belonging to a block of fixed magnetization. So let me just point out again, why when we construct the full basis, the basis of fixed magnetization of fixed number of up spins here, then later on we need to locate a particular state in that basis, meaning, for example, we have to locate state 9, meaning finding its position 4. Why don't we just use a simple mapping that we pre-construct, so from this state number to this index? So Chris had a question about that yesterday, which was a very valid question. So, I mean, the point is that if we make this in a trivial kind of list, this S goes from 0 to 2n minus 1. So we cannot store typically all those numbers, and that's the whole point of even doing these blocks, because the basis is too large. Now, this is the simplest way just to search in that list. In principle, one could use some more sophisticated data structure to make this a little bit more efficient. But we are not going to do that here. So this is really good enough. The time taken to search this list scales as log of m. Yes?
General question. This whole method, well, it is of course suitable for calculation of observables.
Right.
But does it allow to understand what kind of possible wave functions?
Right, right. I mean, that we will get to that. So for now, we have just discussed how to make the Hamiltonian. But of course, when you diagonalize the Hamiltonian, you get all the states, including the ground state. And of course, that ground state is just some linear combination of these basis states. And okay, just looking at the wave function typically doesn't tell you so much. But later on, we will talk about what to actually look at in these states. And normally what we look at is correlations, various correlation functions to understand what this state is. But just the wave function itself, just in terms of the coefficients of the expansion in terms of basis states, is typically not something that you get much information from. So we need to look at some physical properties. But so for now we are still just making the Hamiltonian. Later we will discuss how to use it. Okay, so this was about the fixed magnetization blocks, and then just again quickly how to construct the Hamiltonian. So we loop over all the states that we have constructed, loop over the sites, find the neighboring sites, and then look at the bits to see if it's if we have parallel or anti-parallel spins. If they are parallel, we only have a diagonal contribution. If it's two anti-parallel spins, we have the diagonal contribution as well as an off-diagonal one, and that's where we have to flip those two spins. So that's done with this. We imagine that we have defined such a function which flips those two bits, and that is the new integer corresponding to having flipped those two spins in the state SA. And then we have to use that subroutine from the previous slide to locate B, which is the location in the list of the state, and that corresponds also to the matrix elements, so H, A, B, and we add one half. So now today we will go on and use more symmetries. So now we will talk about a translationally invariant system in 1D, so if you have a closed string. So in what we did before, in principle, we could have done any kind of system. Of course, we also used the fact before here that we have a periodic system, although we could have done some other kind of system. But here, when we extract the nearest neighbor, I did it in such a way that it really corresponds to having a periodic boundary condition. But in principle, one could construct the Hamiltonian for an open chain as well. Now we will do the periodic ring, and we will look at momentum states. So the system is translationally invariant, and then it just follows that this we can find states or we can make eigenstates of the Hamiltonian which have some momentum. And what is the definition? So if we have a state N which is an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, then if we translate that state, so this means translating the state one lattice spacing, cyclically permuting the sites, if you will, then we get this phase factor in front of it, and that k there is the momentum, and we are working on a finite system of n sites, so the momentum is some multiple of 2 pi over n. Okay? So let's look again at really the definition of this operator. So we can define it in terms of cyclic permutation of these indices. So when T acts, you see I just permute the indices. So whatever, so this cyclically comes to the front there. So, and again, this translation operator commutes with the Hamiltonian because we have a translationally invariant system. And that means that the Hamiltonian splits into momentum blocks. So we can use eigenstates of this translation operator with a given momentum k as basis states. Now, if we go to states of fixed magnetization, these blocks that we considered before, of course, the translation operator also commutes with mz. So, and this is all trivial, of course. The mz blocks also split into momentum blocks. So we can again work with a fixed magnetization, and within that block of fixed magnetization, we can choose a momentum k, and we can construct the eigenstates for that momentum. But now it's more complicated than in the case of magnetization, because in the case of the magnetization, what we did just really corresponded to reordering the states, so only including some subset of states when we construct the block. In this case, we really explicitly have to construct eigenstates of T which satisfy this relation. So that's what we want to do. So how do we do that? So this is the a general expression. So what we do is we start from what we call a representative state. So I will say a little bit more about what that is in a minute. But for now, let's just say you start with one state A, and that's one of these basis states with up and down spins, right? Okay, and now you see we sum this state translated in all possible ways. So T is again the translation operator, and T to the R just corresponds to translating R times, and we have the phase factor there, and this is just the normalization which we will determine. So that's an eigenstate of momentum. So I'm sure you have seen something similar before. So of course, in just single particle quantum mechanics, the momentum states are something like that, but in continuous space. So this is on a lattice. So what is this representative? Well, a representative represents all the translations of a given states. So for a four-site system with zero in the zero magnetization block, these are the two representatives we have. So if you look at this one, you see if we translate it, we get all these states. So this state is the representative for all these four states, because these states are just related to each other by translation. And for this state, you see there's only one, because if we translate it again, we get back to the same state. So any of these four states in this case, or two states in this case, any of them could in principle be a representative. So there's nothing that says that we have to use this one. We could use any of them. But it's very convenient to always choose the one which corresponds to the smallest integer in this binary representation. So you see, this is the smallest number, right? This is the number 3. And this is the number 6, and so on. So this is the smallest among those, and this is also the smallest among those two. So the convention is that the representative must be a state with the lowest integer representation among all its translations. Okay? So then if A and B both are representatives, also they are not related to each other by any translation. So any translation of A, if A is a representative, cannot give some other state B, which is also a representative. And then, of course, what we want to do in the end, we want to construct the whole complete basis of momentum states. So that means, in the end, we want to choose all possible representatives and make momentum states out of those. So that's the point here, and we always need to check for this when we start with some representative, then make them everything we need to do with it, then we choose another one, and we always need to check that a new state that we add to the basis has not been considered before, meaning that there is no translation of B that gives gives A. So now it should be noted here that when we translate states, some states have some periodicity which is less than n. So some translation of A could be equal to A itself. And you see an example of this one here. So this one, if I translate it twice, I get back to itself. So here R equals 2. In this case, of course, since the system is periodic, for all states it will be true that if I translate n times, I get back to itself. But this periodicity of the state will actually affect the normalization constant here, because regardless of what the periodicity is, I always want to write the state in terms of all the translations. In principle, I don't have to do that. I could just sum up to whatever the periodicity is here, because when I go on in the summation, I just get copies of the same thing. But it's just more convenient to write it like this and to determine the normalization constant, which will depend on the periodicity. So to see what the normalization is, let's look at if the periodicity is R. Let's look at what is the total weight in this sum from of the original non-translated representative A. So the first term, R equals 0, just gives 1. I'm just talking about these phase factors here. So for R equals 0, the phase factor is 1. The next copy of exactly the same state I get if little r equals uppercase R, so there's a contribution like that. And then I get 2kr, and then all the way up to n over r minus 1 times r. So there are n over r terms in this sum for a given r. And of course, n over r has to be an integer. That's clear because just from physically what we are doing, we are translating a system. So if r is not n, or n has to be some multiple of r. That's clear. So this is the total weight. And now if you think about the complex plane and the unit circle, these are equally spaced points on the unit circle. So this will add up to 0 unless this kr is a multiple of n to pi, where n is some integer. Otherwise, so in that case, we just get n divided by r times 1, because then all these are 1, right? Otherwise, they are equally spaced point on the unit circle, and it cancels. So that means that there's actually a condition on the periodicity. So for given k, if R does not satisfy this condition, then one can actually not even construct a momentum state based on that representative, because it has all these translations with the phases add up to zero. So there simply is no such momentum state. So that's one important thing one has to check when we construct the basis that this condition holds. So, and if that condition holds, then again the weight of the representative is n divided by r, and all those other translations, they will also come in multiples of n over r times whatever phase factors are there. So I just talked about the untranslated representative here, but the same holds for all the other ones. So they will cancel out unless that condition is satisfied. So let's look more closely at that condition. We want to write it in a different way, which is more convenient when we actually program it. So the condition of K and R is that KR should be some multiple of 2 pi. And the momentum itself is some integer n times 2 pi over n. That's the condition. Those are the discrete momenta we can have in a chain of n sides. So if we plug that in here, the 2 pi's cancel, and we just get m times r divided by the system size equals some integer n that corresponds to, some arbitrary integer n. So if we just rearrange it, we get that the m corresponding to the momentum has to be a multiple of n divided by r, and that means that modulus of m and n over r has to be zero. So m is some multiple of n over r. That implies that the modulus is zero. So this is the condition that we actually will use in a program. Right. So what we now want to do is to construct the momentum basis. We again want to store some list of states, and the list that we are going to store is the list of valid representatives. So when we did the fixed magnetization momentum basis, we stored the list of all the states with a given magnetization. Now we want to also typically consider fixed magnetization, but we are not going to store all the states. We are just going to store a set of representatives, and those representatives have to satisfy this condition on their periodicity, because we will choose the momentum when we start, and depending on the momentum, this condition may or may not be satisfied. So now let's look at the normalization constant. We just wrote the normalization constant like this, but now we also need to compute it, and that normalization constant will depend on the periodicity. So for a periodicity R, we get n over R as a prefactor for all the states, and the sum goes only up to R minus 1, right? Because if it's periodic, it will just repeat. So if you look carefully at that, this will be the normalization. So what is this? So this comes when we take the overlap of the state with itself. Everything is multiplied by a prefactor n over r, so that gets squared when we compute the normalization. And this is the number of terms in the sum, because now we can terminate this sum at ra minus 1. And then we have the 1 over na squared. So that gives that this number na is the system size squared divided by the periodicity. So that's the normalization for a given periodicity of the state. All right? So now to construct the basis, this is how we do, and now it looks pretty much like before. We loop over all the states. I have a subroutine now, check state, because we have some conditions that we have to check if it's a valid representative. So we want to include only the valid representatives in our basis, and we will make use of a subroutine that I will discuss momentarily. So this subroutine will also return to us the periodicity of the state. And we will also use it as a flag for a non-valid representative. So if this R is minus one, that's going to be taken as a flag for not including this state in the basis. So if R is larger than or equal to zero, that means it's that this S was a new valid representative, so then we increase the size of our basis, we store the representative exactly as before, and in addition now we also store the periodicity of the state, because we will need that later on. If we really are tight on space, in principle we don't need to store it, because we can compute it later on as we need it, just from the stored state, but let's just store it here. So how about this subroutine check state? What is it again doing? Well, so again, R will be the periodicity of the state, and we store it as well. And if R is minus one, this subroutine will return sometimes R is minus one, and that means that either the magnetization is not correct, because again, we will look at also fixed magnetization at the same time. So what else could be wrong with that state? So wrong magnetization we had before also, that's one thing. One condition of the representative was that it's the integer corresponding to it is the smallest among all the translated states. So when we check whether S is a good representative, we will translate it in all possible ways and check what integer we get, and if we get one integer which is smaller than S, it's not going to be a good representative. It actually means that representative, the representative of that state, has already been included before, because the condition is that S is the smallest of the translated ones. And finally, S, the state, may not be compatible with the momentum. So let's look at how we actually do that check state. So what we will need to do is to translate the state. We have to check all the translations of a state. And for that we will again use the bits, and we will define a function which we call cycle bits, which is just cyclically permuting the n first bits of the integer t. Because again, those are the bits that we use for an n-side system. If we use Fortran 90, we can use this built-in function iShiftC, which takes an integer and then it takes another integer, which tells the function how many steps and in what direction the bits should be shifted. And now remember that the bits, we normally start them, so the lowest bit is to the right, whereas when we write the state, the first spin is normally on the left. So if we define the translation so as to permute in let's say the right direction or clockwise direction, the bits should be shifted in the counterclockwise direction. So that's why we have minus one here. And n is telling the function that it's the n first bits that should be cyclically shifted. So it's convenient that there is actually a built-in function in Fortran 90 for this task that we want to do. So I just here call it cycle bits, because it sounds slightly less cryptic than this function, and anyway, my pseudocodes are not really tied to a particular language. So if you use some other language, you would have implemented it in some other way. And remember again that the representative has the lowest state integer among all its translations, so let's see how we do that. So this is the subroutine, so it takes the integer S that we want to check, and R will be the periodicity, or if R is minus one, it means it's an invalid representative. So we start by assuming that it's going to be an invalid one, so we set R to minus one, and later on if it turns out it's an okay state, we will set R to be the periodicity. So the first thing we do is we check the magnetization, exactly as we did before. So if the magnetization or the number of up spins is not what we like, then we just return immediately, and then R is going to be minus one. Now we will start translating the state. So here I copy S into a temporary integer T, which is the one which is going to contain the translations. So I will translate up to N times. So we call the cycle bits. So now T is itself cycled like this. And now we check if T is less than the one we call the subroutine with, that means that this is not a good representative. It has in fact been that class of states has been included before. So if T is less than S, we are just done, we return. If T equals S, that means we come back to the state itself. So that could happen if I equals N, but it could also happen before that if the state has some periodicity R less than N. So whenever that happens, we are also done, because when we have come back to the same state again, there's no need to go on. We would just do the same thing. So then we can just check. I would, in that case, be the periodicity of the state, and this was the condition that we have to use. So for given momentum, and now K actually is not here the momentum. So K is here what I called M before. Sorry if that is confusing. So K is the integer corresponding to the momentum. So K is a number from 0 to N minus 1, which I called M before. So this was the condition on the momentum given the periodicity. And then I just copy that I into R, which is going to be the periodicity, and we return. So that's how we check the state. Yes, please.
You already store S in C. Why are you checking it given that C of S are equal?
Okay, so this is just the first time T is S, right? But then, you see, I immediately change T because I translate it once, and so every time I translate, T is going to change. And in that process, so if I go back to the picture, I think it's maybe clearer. So if we go back to this picture, so if this is my S, so here S would be 3, right? So any time I translate, I get a larger number. But at some later time in that loop over all the states, I will, for example, get this state, right? And when I translate this state once, I get that one, and this is a smaller integer. So then I know immediately that is not a good representative. But this one, I always get something larger, so this is a good representative. So that's what I call T. I just copy it into T first, because I don't want to destroy S, right? If I just said S is equal cycle bits S, I don't know what my S originally was. So I need a temporary variable for that. All right. Any other questions? Okay, now let's look at the Hamiltonian in this basis. So now we make the basis. When we have made the basis, what do we have? We have a list of state integers, and those are now the state integers from which we can construct the momentum states. But we are actually never going to really construct the momentum states. The momentum states are of this form, but we only need to work with those representatives. We never actually in the program have to construct those states. Because everything we need to do with those states, we can do analytically outside the program. So now let's look at the Hamiltonian matrix. So now I want to write the Heisenberg model in this form. So I want to lump all the diagonal terms together, and I call that H0. And then I want to store, or I want to treat all the off-diagonal terms individually as HJ, so labeled by, the, let's say, the left spin out of the two that it flips. So J goes from 1 to n. So you will see in a moment why I want to group them in this way. So now we have terms in the Hamiltonian H naught up to H n, but H naught is special, it's all the diagonal terms. So now we want to act with the Hamiltonian on a momentum state. That's how we construct the Hamiltonian. We act on a state and see what we get. And this was the momentum state. Well, so this is the momentum state, and I write it out in terms of the sum. And now you see here in this expression, I have already used the fact that H and the translation operator commute, because I have brought H across all these translation operators. So when I act, I should get H T to the R, but T and H commute, so I can bring H to the front there. After I have done that, I write H in terms of all these component operators, like this. So now I have HJ here. So you should note that if I just looked at, let's say, HJ acting on the state, in principle I cannot bring that across T to the R, because these individual operators, except for that one, these individual operators don't commute with the translation. But the sum of them does commute with the Hamiltonian. So I can bring the sum in front, and then after I have done that, it's perfectly fine to have HJ here, because I have the sum of all of them. Okay? Now let's look at what is HJ acting on A. So HJ acting on A will give some other spin state. So again, this is the representative now. And the representative is just the state of up and down spins, right? It's just a particular state of up and down spins. And these operators acting on such a state is also going to give us just one, at most, such state, because the diagonal operator, of course, gives the same state just with some prefactor, which depends on what is the diagonal energy of the state. These off-diagonal operators, only one of these guys is going to give us something in the case of spin 1/2. Either, or it could destroy the state. So if these spins JJ plus 1, if they are parallel, this will give nothing, it will just destroy the state. If they are anti-parallel, the spins will be flipped by one of these guys, and the other guy will destroy the state. So in any case, H J acting on A is going to either destroy the state, or it's going to be another single basis state. Okay, but in that case, it's not always true that what you get, for example, if you flip two spins, it's not always true that that would be a representative. And we always work just with the representative. So if I again go back here, let's say so this is the representative. Now let's say I flip these two middle spins here, then I get 0, 1, 0, 1. Oops, that is a representative, in fact. That's fine. But if I flip this and that spin, the first and last bits, then I get 1, 0, 1, 0, which is not a representative. That's this one. And the momentum states are always written in terms of the representative, so I always need to see how that state is related to a representative. So if BJ is a representative, so it's going to be true that this state is some translation of a representative, right? So if you take the state you get when you get two spins, flip two spins, what you have to do is to translate that state a number of times, and then you will get a representative. So here I write it in the inverse way, that state is some number, so this little h, ja, is just some number, which corresponds to 1/2 in case of these operators, and in this case it would be whatever the energy is. And it's some translation of a representative. So if I replace that in here, this is what I get. And now, we want to write this in a term in terms of, well, we want to write it as we write the momentum state based on the representative B. But you see, we have a little bit of a problem here, because when we construct the momentum states, we should just have T to the R here, and now we have R minus this LJ, which is some other integer. But it's easy to rewrite this summation. So we just shift the summation index, we will pull out the phase. And then we have to keep in mind that the normalization of our A of K and the BJ of K could possibly be different. So I just write it in terms of that momentum state, but I have to include the ratio of the normalizations in front of it, and I will have that phase that I got when I shifted the summation index here. And then I have a sum over all these operators. So, acting on a momentum state, I get a sum of other momentum states. So if we look specifically at the diagonal and off-diagonal terms, so the matrix element of the diagonal term, there it's not going to change the representative, so it's just a diagonal factor, so Bj is going to be the same as A in that case, and there are not going to be any phase factors or anything, so it's really just the diagonal part of the energy. And for the off-diagonal parts, I can write this ratio of the normalization factors as just the ratio of the periodicities. As we saw in the previous slide, the normalization was just given in terms of the normalization contained the periodicity. And then I have this phase factor, which where this number Lj is something that we have to find. So when we act with the Hamiltonian on the representative state, we have to take that state and see how many times you have to translate it before we get a representative, and that number is going to be this Lj. And the 1/2 comes from there, of course. So those are the matrix elements. So now we will look at how to actually implement it. So the most tricky maybe part is this one, but it's actually not tricky, but maybe it seems confusing at first. So we act on the state, we get some number times the translation of a representative, and we have to find what the representative is, and we have to find what this is. And now we can completely, at this stage, when we just find this Lj and this Bj, we don't need to care about what that prefactor is. So if we flip two spins, we just flip the two spins, and we don't need to care at this stage what prefactor we have there. So let's see how we do it. And as you see, it's really simple. So we have a subroutine that I call representative, and it takes some state integer s. It's going to give us the representative corresponding to that state and the number of translations that relate the two. So R is some number of translations of S. So this is sort of the end. So when we find this L, Lj, and Bj, what we do is we start to translate the state we get when we operate on A until we find the representative. Well, we find the lowest number corresponding to those. So what do we do? We use some temporary variable R, to which I copy S, as we did before, and I use another one, T, and L I initialize as zero, and then we start to translate. So now we just want to translate, and again I store it in this T, and we want to find the smallest number out of all those translations. So initially T is S, then we translate it, and if T is less than R, so R is always going to contain the smallest that we found so far. So if T is less than R, then we set R equals T, and then that number is going to be equal to how many times we translated so far. So we are going to do that for all translations. So when we are done, we will have the smallest among those, and we will have the number of translations relating S and R. that's how we do it. So now this find state that we did before, we need to make one small modification, because now, remember, we have for momentum states, we have these representatives, and the representatives have to satisfy this condition for their periodicity. So there are some representatives that are not allowed just because they have the wrong periodicity. They have a periodicity which is not at all compatible with the momentum. So when we act on our states, when we do have, these are always valid representatives. But the state that we get may potentially not be a valid representative. So it may actually be some state which is not even included in our basis. So that we can check in this find, or we have to take that into account when we find the state. So now when we have found the representative R, later we will have to locate it in our list of stored states. We do that exactly as before, but now we have to take into account the fact that we may actually not find that state in the list. It may not be there. So it turns out it's easy to modify this find state algorithm just in the following way. So if it ever happens that this B minimum and B maximum, which are the brackets within which we are looking, if the minimum becomes larger than the maximum, that should never happen, but it will happen actually if the state we are looking for, the S we are looking for, is not in this list SB. So then we flag that by setting B to minus 1. So later when we construct the Hamiltonian, we will see whether this B is minus 1. That means it's a state which should not be included at all. I hope that's not too confusing, that that can actually happen. So, and you may say, well, that's odd, why do we actually get it? Well, remember that a state which is not in the Hamiltonian, in the basis just because the periodicity is wrong, it really means that that state is zero. So if we write down that sum, we get zero. So if we get such a contribution from some particular operation, it means that if we would include all such contributions, we would in the end get something that sums up to zero. So it's not something which is mathematically fishy here. It's really completely okay. Oops, just quickly about constructing the Hamiltonian. Nothing much changes up here. It only changes at the off-diagonal part. So constructing the diagonal matrix elements is exactly as before. Of course, in practice, it's different because here the states we are summing over is just over some representative states, but when the list is constructed at this stage, that doesn't really matter. Okay, but now when we flip spins, we have to take into account that S may not be a representative, so then we call this representative routine. So then we get the representative R, and we get that number L, the number of translations that we will need. And then exactly as before, we locate the state in the list, and what we should locate now is this R, which is the representative, and it gives us the location B, but B may be minus 1, which means that it's not something which is even in our basis. So that's why we have another if statement here, that if B is not negative, then we add a matrix element. And now this was the matrix element that we looked at before, the off-diagonal one. So we have stored these periodicities of the A and B states, and we have the phase factor, and this is where this L will appear. And now, of course, the Hamiltonian is complex in this case because these are momentum states. So you need to declare this a complex vector in this case. All right, so, and again, now we have to diagonalize the Hamiltonian, we can look at the states. So I hope this is not all confusing. Do you have any questions? So again? Yeah, so if B is minus 1, it just means that we found a state which is actually not part of our basis. So nothing should be done if B is minus 1. So B is minus 1, again, if when we look in the list of stored representatives, if the state is not in there, then B is minus 1. And if the state may not be there for some cases because we have this periodicity of a state has to satisfy this condition. And it may happen that when we act with some Hamiltonian operator on one of the representatives in our basis, we may get a state which has the wrong periodicity. That may happen. So the Hj times A, that state may violate this condition. So, I mean, to give you an example, if we act on this representative with a spin flip operator, we can get this representative, right? Now, this state is not a valid state if the momentum is, say, pi over 2. Because then this M is, see the periodicity is, let's see, now here the periodicity is 2, so N over R is 2, so M mod, let's see now, maybe I'm wrong. Right, I think it should work. Let's see now. So this state, if the momentum is pi over 2, this state cannot be in the basis. Right, because then, if we just go up here again and look again, if the momentum is pi over 2 and I translate twice, then I get e to the pi, which is minus 1. Right, so this cancels out. But let's see, is this something wrong with this n over r? So r is 2. If the momentum is pi, that means pi over 2, that means m is, let's see, m is, where is my 2 pi over, yeah, then m is 1, right? So this is going to be violated. So it depends on the momentum, right? So for some momenta, this is a valid representative. But for some momenta, it's not a valid representative. But you can clearly get this representative when you act on this state. So that's one of the complications of the momentum basis, that actually even the size of the basis will depend on what the momentum is. So if the momentum is 0, we can actually, all states are allowed, right? Because if the momentum is 0, that means m is 0, so this is always true. And of course, from here, it's clear too, because this phase factor is always 1, so it can never vanish. But for 0 momentum, you will get the maximum size of the momentum block. And then for other momentum, the blocks can be smaller. Yep.
I just wanted to know what was the motivation to choose the state as Fourier transform, not explicitly stating the translation as exponential of say minus k r, because the C operator just translated the
right. So why we choose this form?
Why including the operator C explicitly instead of just putting in the exponential, like some momentum transmission R?
Now I don't quite see what you're saying. So you're suggesting to?
No, I'm just asking that. Yeah. Like, this is a form of the states that
right.
we choose.
Right.
And we explicitly put the translation operator.
Right, the T to the R, right.
There is a form of the transition of people.
Right.
As exponential of C minus E.
Oh, I see. So you could, yeah, well, yeah, yeah, I could define it like that. But then the translation operator would depend on K, right?
Yeah.
So I think that would be rather inconvenient. So I think it's easier to define the translation operator just as you know, translating a state, and the phase factor is something else that we add. But yeah, of course, in principle, one could do that. But I don't. I think we should make life as easy as possible. So I have the feeling if you do it like that, it would be more complicated. Yeah, it would change many things in the definitions and so on. So let's see, where are we? So we have done the check state, and we have constructed the Hamiltonian. So that's it for the momentum states. Okay, so now let's look at one other symmetry that we can use. So now we have looked at the conservation of the magnetization. We have looked at the translational symmetry. Often we also have another symmetry, reflection symmetry, or parity. So the parity operator, the reflection operator, is defined in this way. We just reverse the order of the indices. That's one way to define the reflection. So now, in most cases, our Hamiltonian would commute with this operator. Right, if I just take my Heisenberg chain and reflect all these states, the Hamiltonian is not changed. And also we have that the Hamiltonian commutes with the translation operator that we discussed before. But now you should know that P and T don't commute. Right? If we first translate and then reflect, that's different from first reflecting and then translating. So in fact, if we first reflect and then translate, it's the same as first translating in the opposite direction and then reflecting, right? So those operators don't commute.
You're generating by
Yeah, that could be. Again, I try to avoid group theory language here, but let's. I think what they're saying is right, but let's. Naively then it would seem, well, we should not be able to use P and T simultaneously, because to block diagonalize all the symmetry operators that we have to use have to commute with each other and with the Hamiltonian. But let's see, can we still exploit P and T at the same time? So let's look at this state. So here I construct a momentum state. But instead of just the translations of a representative, I use this form, 1 plus some number p times the reflection, where p is plus minus 1. So this is just this is a linear combination of the representative and its reflection. And the way I add them up with phase factors, it's clearly a valid momentum state. If I check what the momentum is, if I just translate it once, there's nothing different from before. It's clearly a momentum state. But is it also an eigenstate of the operator P? That's the question. So does it has momentum K, but does it also have parity P? So let's act with P and see what we get. Okay, we act with P. So now when I act with P here, as I said again, I should have written it down explicitly, but if I reflect first and then translate, that's the same as first translating in the opposite direction and then reflecting. So when I bring P past T to the R, I get actually T to the minus R here. And then I get P here, and P squared is 1, right? If I reflect twice, I get 1. Now I want to write it in the original form, so then I can just pull out a little p here, this plus minus 1, and I can rewrite, just change the summation index here, so I get minus I change the sign here of these, so this is what I get. Okay, because the sum includes all possible ones, so it's okay to change the sign. Okay, so this is now p times the original state there, where p is plus minus 1. Well, this is true only now if... So actually, let's see. Now, I think I said something wrong. So this is true if... Yeah, so this is only equal to that if k is 0 or k is pi, right? Because the sign is different here. So the definition is with a minus sign there. But now I have a plus sign there. But if k is 0, it's, of course, the same. And if k is pi, it's also the same, because e to the I k pi, e to the I pi r is the same as e to the minus I pi r, right? So, in fact, this is also an eigenstate of parity for those special values of the momentum. Yep.
The sum is not symmetric, and then you are changing r to minus r.
Yeah, because if you think of what this summation is, so it's I write the sum here as 0 to n minus 1, but I could also write, I mean, it's all cyclic, right? So I could also write the sum as going from minus n over 2 to n over 2, right? That would be exactly the same thing, because these are just equally spaced points on the circle. So then I can just switch the order of that sum and again write it in that way. So it's okay to change the signs of these guys here. But it's a good point. I should maybe have included one more step here. But then for these two momenta, it turns out that we can use parity and translation at the same time. So what this means is that within those momentum blocks, actually P and T do commute. And actually physically it's clear, because if you think about a momentum, so if you have a momentum state, it's not reflection symmetric, because if I change r, I change the direction, and if I have a state with a given directionality, which is determined by the momentum, it's not reflection symmetric. But on the lattice, these particular momentum states do not correspond to propagating states, if you will, right? K is equal to minus k, so they are actually reflection symmetric. So if we have these momenta 0 or pi, and actually often those momenta are interesting, because the ground state turns out is often in the zero momentum sector, and often we deal with lowest excitations at k equals pi. So then we can actually use this symmetry for those momenta. It turns out we can actually also, even if for general k these states are not parity states, we can actually exploit parity also for other states. We can construct so-called semi-momentum states, which basically mix k and minus k, but I think we should do that tomorrow. It's probably already 12. So unless you have any more questions, next time we will discuss these semi-momentum states. Yeah, you have a question, please.
I'm wondering why you define the reflection symmetry in this
way. Yeah, you could do it in another. So what would you suggest?
For example, time sum minus 1 and before the reflect, before the right side.
Let's see. So here I just reverse the order of all the spins. I mean, there are many ways. If you just draw a circle with some number of points. Now I do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So when I reverse it, I just get, so the first one goes to the n, so this is n, which is equal to 8. So now I get, so now this will be numbered instead, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Of course, you could also just draw a line somewhere here and then say, okay, let's do it that way. Maybe this is what you would have in mind. Well, I'm not sure why that will be more natural. So, I mean, when you reflect, you can draw a line anywhere you like, right? You could draw it here and reflect around that line. So now, in my case, I reflect around, you know, that kind of line, right? So, I'm not sure what you mean, but maybe we can discuss it more later. But you're right. I mean, it's not. Unique, but the point is that this is definitely a symmetry of the Hamiltonian, right? If you write down the Hamiltonian, and then on all the indices of the spin operators, you do this this operation, you have the same Hamiltonian again. It's just rearranging the terms. Right. Yes.
I can just like say something about this question. We can do that if like. Remember, look at where you define, you have S0, S1z, S2, that's the order. And the right hand side order will be reversed. You could still write it but with the same order, but taking the factor into the minus one is the first function of computation. That's what I ask you. So it's the same thing. It's just that if you have to do that, then the right hand side should be the same as the left hand side, but with the factor minus one is the first function of computation.
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that minus one, but we can discuss it later. Do we have any other questions? All right, let's continue tomorrow then.
I think the question was about fermion versus